gonna have a trip, here's gonna trip. Lean back and stay a while, now the trip, here's gonna trip.
Hello again, Brad Crandall here with more of Monitor 67. Coming up in this half hour, an interview with a teenage girl who's already an award-winning scientist. First, Monitor Music. Sunset Strings with I'll Set My Love to Music. And now, an interview with a young lady who will restore your faith in today's youth. She's one of the winners of this year's Science Talent Search, sponsored by Westinghouse, conducted annually by the Science Clubs of America. She is Sandra Schwartz of McLean, Virginia, and she talked with reporter Peter Hackus about her accomplishment.
Sandra, what is the project that won you this recognition?
I studied the effects of bacterial endotoxin on the course of Plasmodium burgii in mice. This is a study of malaria.
I was going to ask you to translate that for the uninitiated. And how did you come about this? Was this in your high school?
Well, no, I got a grant from the National Science Foundation to work at Walter Reed Institute of Research last summer.
And what was the general idea of your day-to-day research? How did you go about it?
Well, each group of mice I injected with endotoxin before I infected them with malaria, and I studied the differences between the two groups of mice, generally.
Well, now, what's the idea behind this, Sandra? I thought we knew all about malaria.
Well, in Vietnam, there's come up a new strain called Plasmodium falciparum, which has become resistant to all drugs they've used in the past. So now we're trying a new approach called nonspecific immunity, which we hope will work against this new strain.
Well, now, this isn't something that you picked up last summer. Obviously, there at McLean High School, you've taken science courses for some time, and you must have been interested for some time.
Yes, sir. I've taken all the science courses, and now I'm taking advanced placement courses this year.
And where do you think it's going to lead you? Where would you like to go in science?
Well, I'd like to get an MD and then become a medical missionary.
In order to what?
Generally help people in the world.
Where would you like to go, and what kind of work would you like to do eventually?
I'd like to either go into the Peace Corps or go on the ship Hope.
Well, now, you were one of only 11 girls, I think, in the top 40 science winners this year. I suppose that means you spend all of your time being a scientist.
Oh, no, sir. I try to extend my horizon somewhat. I'm a cheerleader at my school. I'm also vice president of the student council. And I spend a lot of my time being a member of Magical Singers.
Sounds like you're a scientific politician. Are you the type that likes to do things around the house as well?
Oh, yes, sir. I love to cook, and I spend a lot of time sewing my own clothes.
When do you find time to study the science?
Well, I have to make time, just about.
You've come a long way, actually, Sandra. What advice would you give to some other students coming along in school who want to become scientists?
Well, I would say hold your conviction true, stick to what you want to do, but don't necessarily become so oriented in one area that you lose all insight into the broader aspects of life.
Have you had any discouragement along the way, Sandra? This was not easy, I'm sure, to come to where you are now.
Oh, yes, I've had discouragements all along the way. Well, generally, I don't think, as each time I entered each one of these competitions, I never really thought that I'd ever make it up to the top where I am right now. Everyone, you know, they just didn't expect it.
How about your family? What do they think of their scientist daughter?
Oh, they're just bubbling over with pride.
I can understand. And your teachers, I suppose.
Oh, yes, sir.
Well, Sandra Schwarz, we certainly congratulate you for your achievements in science. We hope to keep track of your scientific career, and one of these days hope to see you as a medical missionary or whatever you choose to do, and I'm sure you can do it.
Thank you very much.
Sandra Schwarz, the shining example of this country's hope for the future. The vast majority of today's kids who are not juvenile delinquents. Now, monitor music with an international flavor. A German gentleman named Gunther Kaumann leading his orchestra and chorus in a song with a French title, one that's been a big success here in America, Chanson d'Amour. Tune to Monitor at 17 minutes after the hour, and in just a few minutes more, we'll be hearing from Joe Garagiola with a sidelight on sports. So stay right here. You're on the Monitor Beacon. Crandall for Monitor with Joe Garagiola coming up in just 2 minutes. First, here's Jimmy Dean with a plaintive song about conflicting emotions. sweet misery.
Oh, when I'm lonely, I think of someone. Someone I call sweet misery. In her arms I was in heaven, but heaven wasn't meant for me. Ooh, I still love her, oh, but I lost her. I mean, she walked out, the hurt walked in. Now our love's gone, just like an old song that no one ever wants to hear again. I count heartaches that a big fool makes, and I think about my sweet misery. I do my sorrow each new tomorrow. Who's they ain't never been a bigger fool than me?
Sports with Joe Garagiola.
Jerry Sloan is a young basketball player with the Chicago Bulls, and he's a good one. Good enough, in fact, to have been picked as an all-star in his second year as a professional in the National Basketball Association. Sloan is above average in another sense. You've got to be a person of no sentiment at all if you don't root for this young man to make it real big as a professional basketball player, because the road to the top has been no easy matter for him. To begin with, Sloan grew up in a small corner of southern Illinois called Gobbler's Knob, and he did his growing up as the youngest of 10 children. Right there, you've got enough of a handicap for anybody. In families that size, the first one out of the house is usually the best one dressed, and by the time you get down to the 10th kid on the ladder, the pickings are apt to be pretty slim. As you would imagine, there's nothing big town about Gobbler's Knob, Illinois. In fact, when young Jerry Sloan was going to school there, he would start out each day by walking a mile to Tucker's Corner. Then, if it was one of those days when he couldn't hitch a ride, he would trudge another 6 miles to McLeansboro. That's where the school was. McLeansboro was a bit bigger than Gobbler's Knob, but there must have been a shortage of boys around there, because the first basketball team Sloan played on featured 4 girls and Sloan. Sloan not only recalls his unusual experience of having 4 girls as teammates, he remembers them well. The girls were Sylvia Braden, Marilyn Lee, Thelma Smith, and Shirley Summers. Sloan particularly remembers Shirley Summers. She was a good rebounder who could get up real high to pick the ball off the backboard. A few years later, Sloan went on to McLeansboro Township High School, where he compiled a great record as a basketball player. This won him an athletic scholarship to the University of Illinois, but he was there only 6 weeks. There was something about all the walking he had to do on campus going from one class to another that somehow failed to make a hit with Sloan. He says he did enough walking to and from school as a youngster in Gobbler's Knob. So Sloan went back to work in the oil fields around McLeansboro for a while, and then decided to go to school at Evansville College. That was his final springboard to the NBA and the chance at stardom with the Chicago Bulls. You see, when Sloan got to Evansville College, the basketball team was loaded with good shooters, so he wisely concentrated on ball handling and defense. He learned these fundamental lessons so well, the Baltimore Bullets made him their second draft choice. Yet he didn't get much of a chance to play with the Bullets last season. But Johnny Kerr, now coach of the Chicago Bulls, was with Baltimore at the time, and he knew what Sloan could do as a rebounder and on defense. Knowing this, Kerr instructed Sloan to work all summer on his shooting. He did, and now he is one of the most complete players in the NBA. It's been a long, rocky road from Gobbler's Knob to the Chicago Bulls. But Jerry Sloan will be the first one to tell you it was well worth the trouble. This is Joe Garagiola for Monitor Sports. And now this for Vigoro.
When the green in your grass is gone, and you gotta make it shape up, make it wake up with the bold green vigor of Vigoro. The bold green vigor of Vigoro.
You bet. And the answer is simple. Every Vigoro product is tailor-made for the area where it's sold. That's the secret behind the bold green vigor of Vigoro. Vigoro for goof-proof lawn foods. You sure ought to try them.
Joe Gargiola is heard every weekend on Monitor and weekdays on NBC Radio. Now, Margaret Whiting with a rather complete vocal description of the male of the species. Just like a man.
Oh, he walks like a man, and he talks like a man, and he looks like a man, and he feels just like a man should. He's got hands like a man, and he stands like a man. He's got hips like a man, and he moves just like a man should.
Hey, why do you say we switch from vocal to instrumental music, huh? Bert Kempfert and the orchestra with an invitation. Hold me.
Thank you.
This is Monitor 67, where you keep up to date on the latest news, sports, and music at home or on the road anywhere around the country. In Louisville, Kentucky, our friends hear us on station WAVE. Now, let's turn the meeting over briefly to our NBC stations all across the nation, and then we'll be back.
Monitor reaches all America on the NBC radio network.
Hello, this is Brad Crandall, your host for Monitor. In this half hour, Petula Clark, Robert Goulet, Walter Wanderley, Victor Borga on stage, Sportive Speed with Ted Webb, and a look at the fascinating job of the State Department courier. Now, the Maurice Bauer Singers with a flag waver. What's more American?
What's more American than cornflakes? The 4th of July and Uncle Sam. What's more American than baseball? I am. What's more American than toothpaste? Rock and roll, peanut butter, toast and jam.
Stage, star performances recorded live in the major nightclubs, theaters, and concert halls of the country. Did you ever wonder what the English language would sound like if punctuation marks were pronounced? Well, I hadn't either, to be honest, but comedian Victor Borga has.
I found that people who speak English sometimes do not understand each other too well, due to the fact that they do not use punctuation marks when they talk. That is why I invented phonetic punctuation. I'll teach you the system. A period sounds like this. Here is a dash. An exclamation point is a vertical dash with a period underneath. Here is a comma. Quotation are two commas. If you happen to be left-handed. Question mark is rather difficult. Finally, the colon. The two little dots, you know, you put them either over or under each other. That is the sound for the colon. I have a book here, and I'm going to read to you a short story so you can hear how this system really sounds. In the open window, there suddenly became light. Beautiful Elinor sat alone, dreaming of but one thing. They had been sitting in the park, and Henry had said... Darling! Is this the first time you have loved? She had answered, yes. What is love? She asked. He answered, well, I couldn't live without it.
I'm sorry.
Where have all your thoughts been this while? He answered, with thee, my maiden. Suddenly he was gone. All she heard was the well-known sound of his departing horse.
Phonetic punctuation as interpreted by that great Dane, Victor Borge. Tula Clark with her latest, This Is My Song. You're tuned to Monitor at 16 minutes before the hour, and just ahead, we'll have a look at the job of the young men who travel the world carrying confidential information for the State Department, the diplomatic couriers. So stay with us. You're on the Monitor Beacon. Brad Crandall here with more of Monitor 67. When our State Department in Washington wants to send instructions to our embassy in Moscow, the man who gets the message there is the courier. His trademark is the diplomatic pouch, a small bag which is sealed at the point of origin and opened only at its destination. Usually, the courier himself doesn't know what's in it. Thus, the job combines travel, excitement, and mystery, according to Frank Irwin, assistant chief of the courier branch, U.S. Department of State. Reporter Betty Grobley interviewed Mr. Irwin in Washington.
Qualifications for the courier service are, first, that the individual must be male, between the ages of 25 through 31, have a college degree, must be single and agree to remain single for 1 year. The other things are that we insist they have finished their military service at the present time, and we prefer to have people who have lived abroad in some capacity, either as a military or civilian, either one.
Do couriers from all parts of the world know each other? Right, you know who the other ones are?
Our service has a closer relevance and friendship with the British, the Queen's Messenger Service. We do travel quite often with many of the Queen's Messengers and the British couriers, and many of our routes parallel them. so that we do travel with them quite frequently. Years ago on the old Orient Express, traveling behind the Iron Curtain, had one car which was made up exclusively of couriers from different nations traveling to the countries behind the Iron Curtain. And this, well, there was a lot of gemütlichkeit there because everybody knew each other. And this was, but this situation has gone with the days of more rapid air transportation, and soon we'll be faced with the problems of the SST.
Mm. Assuming that you are in a plane, we hope this doesn't happen, but assuming you are, Frank Irwin, as a courier, in a plane, and you think it's going to crash, and you have some information in a pouch, you don't know what's in it. I presume you don't know what's in it, but it's there. Do you have a duty to destroy that if you think the plane is going to crash, or what?
If possible. If the plane crashes, it'll probably be destroyed anyhow, as long... along with the courier. In fact, I had one experience where this happened to the pouches, with the exception of one, but it didn't happen to me.
What happened?
Close enough.
What happened?
Well, I had the unfortunate incident of being involved in a plane crash in the Wienerwald, the Vienna Woods, on October the 10th, 1955, in which a few of us escaped, but the plane was totally demolished, and I suffered injuries and burns, which took a year to from which to recuperate, and I still have some of the scars from burns, as well as a built-up right shoe from a short leg.
Do you try to steal each other's pouches by any chance?
No. In fact, the American courier, the U.S. courier traveling in Russia, for instance, they're left completely alone. They recognize our rights for couriers, and the courier service actually is to carry dispatches between the Department of State and our foreign service missions, and laterally between the missions and in return to the department. This right is covered by the Vienna Convention, the latest convention concerning the rights under international law. And in Russia, it's realized very much if anything happened to any of our couriers, that this would, the old game of tit for tat of restricting their couriers would be the next thing.
So it's taken very seriously. We've been talking with Frank Irwin, who is assistant chief of the courier branch of the Department of State. And this is Betty Groby in Washington for Monitor.
A look at the life of an international messenger, the State Department courier. Now, more Monitor music. Here's the big voice of Robert Goulet with a wry musical comment on the passing scene. World of Clowns.
We live in a world of clowns, laughing at ups and downs, never in tune. It always seems we smile through our tears.
At the Monitor Sports Desk, here's Mel Allen.
Monitor presents Sport of Speed. It's time for your weekend checkpoint for Ted Webb's news, views, and results from the world of auto racing. Brought to you by the many service stations from coast to coast that carry a brand of Pennsylvania motor oil. Ted will be along in just a moment. First of all, let me ask you this. Is your car's engine running like something it doesn't fit? Well, maybe you better change to a brand of Pennsylvania motor oil. Yes, it's a proven fact that crude oil from wells in the Pennsylvania region produces oils of superior lubricity, or oiliness. Because they have a unique molecular structure, Pennsylvania motor oils last longer, make your car's engine run smoother. Follow the lead of sports car fans. For the good of your engine, insist on a brand of Pennsylvania motor oil. And by the way, if you're a sports car fan, get this. The Pennsylvania Grade Crude Oil Association again this year is repeating its offer of rally kits. Each kit has six big checkpoint signs, windshield stickers numbered 1 through 100, and a pad of 120 sanctioned rally scoring slips. To get a rally kit for your club, just send $1 to Checkpoint, Box 96, Oil City, Pennsylvania. Now, here's Ted.
Thank you, Mel. Dan Gurney of Costa Mesa, California, started the Formula One racing season auspiciously today with a split-second win in the Race of Champions at Brands Hatch, England. This event, while it does not count in the race for the World Driving Championship, nevertheless is of great importance on the international calendar, since it displays for the first time the Formula One speed creations that will be in action this year. Dan was driving an American-built Eagle, which he has designed and which is powered by a V12 Gurney-Westlake adaptation. Gurney finished the 40-lap, 102.5-mile race only 0.4 of a second ahead of Lorenzo Bandini in Ferrari. An oil slick almost did him in with 5 laps to go, but Dan was able to hold his lead despite a tremendous drive by the Italian. Joe Siffert of Switzerland in a Cooper Maserati took third, with Mexico's Pedro Rodriguez finishing fourth, also in Cooper. Richie Ginther of Granada Hills, California, was hard luck man of the meet. Running second in a team car to Gurney's, he also hit the oil, going back to sixth spot, but he later withdrew due to handling trouble. In winning the final race of the meet, Gurney made it a clean sweep, having also clinched the two preliminary 10-lap heats, setting a new lap record of 103.2 miles an hour. Yesterday, Dan set fast time, for which he was awarded 100 bottles of vintage champagne, which surely must have come in handy after the final victory. The 100-mile Grand National set for the NASCAR Late Model Boys yesterday at Spartanburg, South Carolina, was canceled due to rain, and no future date was announced. One of the foreign racing contingent freely admits he likes the color of the prize monies over here and means to direct every effort to take some home. Lucien Bianchi was at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway on Thursday last for some test running and announced that he would enter the USAC Championship 150-miler at Phoenix on April the 9th. Aldo Andretti, the twin brother of national champion Mario, also took some practice laps at the speedway. From Bristol, Tennessee, comes word that Dick Hutchison of Charlotte, who won his first Grand National at that international speedway last year, has entered the 7th annual Southeastern 500 scheduled for next Sunday, March the 19th. He'll be driving a Ford Fairlane in the NASCAR-sanctioned race. The 1967 running of the famous Sportsman Modified Classic at Langhorne, Pennsylvania Speedway on October the 8th will be lengthened from a 100-miler to a 150-mile grind. This event is a highlight of the season for this type of race car, with champions from tracks all over the eastern United States vying for the substantial purse. This is Ted Webb from Sebring, Florida.
Sport of Speed with Ted Webb is brought to you twice each weekend by the many famous brands of Pennsylvania motor oil. For the lasting good of your engine, insist on a Pennsylvania motor oil. This is Mel Allen for Monitor Sports. Thank you.
Alderley in the orchestra with Chiganka. Now, a reminder that right after the news, there will be a radio special in NBC's Second Sunday series. Entitled Impact Radio Around the World, it will take a look at radio, the most useful and universal communications medium for entertainment, for propaganda, and for information. So be sure to listen to Impact Radio Around the World just ahead on most of these NBC stations. You've been listening to Monitor. I'm Brad Crandall.
Keep tuned, the latest news now is on the air. Keep tuned for sports and views now from everywhere.
Wetson's for people who like delicious food. Yes, at Wetson's, you're sure to enjoy those palate-pleasing hamburgers, golden brown french fries, and Wetson's thick shakes. In Pinebrook, New Jersey, there's a Wetson's on Route 46 at the Hook Mountain Road traffic light.
Hi, this is Sterling Yates. Join me on WNBC, the big voice of Big Town USA, weekdays at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. on Fortune Phone, as I keep you in touch with Big Town, where in the early 1800s, the mother of 15-year-old Cornelius Vanderbilt offered him a boat to complete an almost impossible farm task. Well, he won his reward, and instead of going to sea, began ferrying passengers back and forth for 18 cents a trip. The beginnings of transportation and the Staten Island Ferry. Big Town, USA.
Motorists' tailgating accidents jump at least 20% above average each January. Your traffic and police departments urge you to keep your distance.
No stock answers in Brad Crandall's Store of Knowledge, weeknights at 9 on the Big Voice of Big Town, USA. WNBC, New York.